Do you want to become a better songwriter? Well, we created a very simple 10-minute songwriter personality test, and it's going to help you better understand who you are as a writer, and it's going to help you in the writer's room when you're writing with other writers, because you're going to be able to identify what kind of writer they are. Maybe even have them take the songwriter personality test. If you're curious and you want to take the songwriter personality test today, just visit songwriterpersonalitytest.com or go to the link on the writingworship.co website.
Welcome to the Writing Worship Podcast, a place for kingdom-minded songwriters to grow in their craft and community.
It's so good to be with you. I'm Eric Nordoff, and welcome to the Writing Worship Podcast. It is summertime, and we have had a very busy summer. We've got a lot of things that are happening behind the scenes that you may not even hear about. We are getting ready for our Writing Worship Conference in October. If you haven't gotten tickets yet, go ahead and go to the website that is linked here in the show notes, and you can go join us and come be with us. It's going to be a fun time of community and connection. And then we've also been working on our live recording. Nick, in particular, who's producing the record, we are going to be recording 14, well, did record 14 songs. We're going to eventually release those. These are 14 songs that were written in our community in over the last, oh, I would say over the last year and a half. Our community has been writing towards the target of this worship record. And it's really songs that are going to edify and encourage the body of Christ. That's our target. We love the church. We want to see the church sing new songs. And these are songs that were written in our community, in the writing club primarily. Sometimes they were written at our writing retreats, either in person or on Zoom. But all of these songs are special. And we love the church. We're going to love the church with these songs, and hopefully you'll find them useful and also resonate with them more than anything. So we're very excited about that. Look for those coming soon. But in the meantime, we have been doing some amazing interviews and conversations in the writing club. And today is one of those conversations. We had Steve Davis join us a few months ago in the writing club during our regular monthly time when a pro writer will come in or a publisher will come, or like in the last episode, you saw Vince Wilcox, an industry veteran, come and talk about a specific topic and just have a conversation, usually with Nick, who is leading those talks. So this is going to be another really, really good one. Steve Davis is, of course, of Sons the Band and is a Maverick City writer, staff writer. And Steve talks about and shares his pastoral heart and talks about his journey in writing worship, leading worship, artistry, Christian faith-based artistry. You're going to love this conversation. I can't wait to share it with you. So here it is, our conversation with Steve Davis of Sons the Band.
Steve Davis of Sons the Band.
Hey, thanks, man. I'm happy to be here. So good to be with you guys today.
First, let's get one thing straight. It's not Sons.
It's not Sons. It's Sons the Band, technically. We were just having this conversation the other day with a guy named David Leonard. If you guys know Nick, I know you know Dave. We were at his studio in Nashville, and he goes, he's like the most effortlessly cool guy in the world, you know? And he's like, guys, is it Sons or is it Sons the Band, you know? And his like perfect Alabama or Arkansas, whatever, I think he's from Arkansas. He's like perfect Arkansas draw. And we're just like, yeah, it's technically Sons the Band, but like our friends call us Sons. So anybody in this room, feel free. It's Sons to y'all.
You, it's Sons the Band, but it's Sons to you.
It's yeah.
What?
Actually, that would be a really great t-shirt.
That's good. There you go. That's sure. Free. You, what? I want to know, because I don't think I know the story. What precipitated this? Was it that there was already a band called Sons, or was it a joke? Like, where did the band part come from? Because I feel like an idiot every time I say the band part.
Nah, man, it's the real deal. The band was actually a bit of a fluke. When we started the whole thing, we didn't really have a name. We just had a bunch of songs and we were about to do a recording and we knew we had to call it something, you know, to have a recording. Couldn't just be like Steve and Jordan have a great time with their friends night.
It could have been,
you know, it could have been, but we decided to make it more official. And it did start with as a joke. We were going back and forth and I was like in a bunch of like pop punk bands back in the day. And so my forte for band names was all like kind of like metal and gnarly names for bands. And so we were just making jokes and I was reading out of, I think it's 2 Peter. I can't remember where the Sons of Thunder reference is in the New Testament.
Oh, the Gospels, right?
Yeah. Somebody references James and John as the sons of the Sons of Thunder.
Yeah.
And, I was like texting Jordan. I was like, we were like doing like bad band name, good band name. There's like a YouTube series or something where the guy does this show. Anyway, we were kind of doing our own version of it. I was like, Sons of Thunder, bad band name or something like that, you know? And we both laughed about it for a second. And then he said something like, well, you know what? Sons isn't bad. And I was like, actually, it's not bad. Let's roll with that for a minute. And the minute is still here. It stuck. And we were talking with JJ from Tribal. And he was like, Sons the Band, man, what a cool name. And we're like, actually, it's Sons the Band. It's Sons the Band now. You know, it's sort of like, it was like, if JJ likes it, that's what it's going to be.
Is that the true story? JJ said it and you just went with it.
We may have said it like in passing previously. Just like Sons, you know, like we're the band Sons, something like that. Yeah. But he was like Sons the Band as the title. And we just went, I guess it's Sons the Band now. You know,
I guess that's it. All right. Well, I want to jump back into that story in a minute. But first, the lightning round.
Let's go, man.
Steve, I feel like you know how this goes with me by now, that we don't do the lightning round at the end. We do it at the beginning. Writing Club friends, you guys know how this goes. It's like you're on Double Dare with Mark Summers, and it's you're not going to get slimed, but it is a quick. So don't think too hard about these answers. First question. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the worst day of your life, 10 being the best day of your life, how are you doing today?
6.5.
Okay, 6.5. Great. We'll see if we can raise it to a 7.
Yeah.
Okay, if you were on a desert island and you could take the song catalog of 3 songwriters with you for the rest of your life, mm-hmm. You don't have to be Christian songwriters, who would they be?
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm going to take the catalog of David Ramirez.
Okay.
Austin, Texas, David Ramirez. I'm going to take Linda Carpenter, probably.
Ooh, okay.
And then... oh man, that's really tough. I guess because I'm a white guy, I gotta say like Chris Martin, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot there with all 3 of those writers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
love it. All right, if you could only listen
to the Christmas music, I got, you know, like for at least once a month.
Say it again.
I would take Linda Carpenter because of the Christmas catalog.
Okay. Because on the desert island, you want to celebrate Christmas still, presumably.
Yeah.
Okay. If you could only listen to 1 song for the rest of your life, but pick from one of these 3 songs.
Okay.
With Arms Wide Open by Creed. Christmas Shoes by What's the band? New Song. We were just talking about them the other day.
Carswell's dad?
Steven's dad, yes. Cool. Steven or Eddie, if you're listening, we love you. Or the Doug, the animated series theme song.
Oh.
Do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Arms Wide Open. That's
wow. Never in a million years would I have guessed that that was it. But here we go.
Yeah.
There you have it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's the end of my lightning round questions.
Those great. Are good. Those are great questions, man. I love that.
You know, it's the same three questions every time, but it's a different, it's such a wildly different set of answers every time that it's fun.
Which ones, in my turn for a second, which one have you had any lightning round answers stick out to you that you still to this day remember between Secret Chord and Writing Worship?
Yeah. Steve's referring to, I used to do a podcast. It's called The Secret Chord, but it's basically just this. We just decided to put it together with Writing Worship, and a bunch of our Writing Worship friends have even been on that. Yeah, there was one, John Guerra, I remember, said to me that he was like a 2 or something. I caught him on like a very bad day.
Yeah.
We went on to have an amazing conversation. That episode is like one of the most listened to, but one of my favorite conversations ever. But I was like, whoa, boy, this guy's like down in the dumps.
Yeah.
And I was like, I hope it gets better. Like, do we need to do some counseling here? No, it was fine. And he was actually in an okay mood. It was just, he was having
a messed up moment. What would you say is the average answer when you ask that 1 to 10 question?
7, 6, or 7, 8, somewhere.
Seven.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
So I'm incredibly average for you today. That's great. That's what I want to know.
You're right in the middle. You're right there. Yeah. With great. Everyone. Yeah. People don't want to stick out too much. I don't know. I rarely have people say a 10, but Leanne, just before you hopped on, Leanne said she was a 10 today. So, which is amazing. He's still here. Well, all right. Well, I have a bunch of questions that I want to ask you about. And it's fun. So Steve and I go back a few years now, and we've written a lot of songs together. And so some of these things I may know the answer, some I don't. So I'll dig in some fun places, I hope. Mm-hmm. First of all, tell us, I think go back to when you and I met is kind of fun, and tell us, what were you doing? And because it's very different now, and give us at least the 3 to 5 minute like journey of where you've been in the past few years.
Yeah. When me and Nick met, I was living in the Detroit area in Michigan. I was living in an apartment in a city called Utica, which is like, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes outside the main city of Detroit. I was working as a worship pastor at a medium-sized, I would say, church in the metro area. I was writing mostly folk music, singer-songwriter-ish folk kind of stuff coming out of a pop punk background, where, you know, I cut my teeth doing shows and learning what it meant to be a artist on the road-ish and what it meant to be an artist that would roll in and haul your own gear and, you know, play to 2 people in a room and try to make it feel like you're just as excited to be there as when you played a room full of like 40 people, which was a great night for us, you know? Anyway, so I was in that world, also in the church world, being worship pastor. That was my full-time gig. Met Nick, and Nick changed my whole life. No, he was one of the people that in that season, the Lord put into my path that he was kind of opening up for me as far as full-time songwriting and full-time music outside of a, I don't know, ecclesiastical role on a church staff, you know? So in 2020, when everything shut down, we all got real good at Zoom writing or virtual writing, depending on what service you wanted to use back then. That opened up a lot of doors for me with the people that I was writing with, mainly with the Maverick City world, who, if you're not familiar with Maverick City, they have a huge catalog. You should check them out.
If you're not familiar with Maverick City, this is Writing Worship.
I don't know. I talk to people every day in traveling, and they're like, well, what do you do? And it's tough to say. Sometimes I say I'm a CCM writer. Sometimes I say I'm like, I write in the church world. A lot of times I've now kind of defaulted to saying I write in the gospel world, because that like immediately, like no matter who you are, people understand what that means. And like, people are like, oh, you mean like, you know, Gaither, like Bill Gaither gospel. And I'm like, no, actually, like Maverick City. And like that, it's like 50-50, whether somebody knows Maverick City or not, which seems insane to me because I live in the world and they're huge, but like, you know, you never know who doesn't know who. Anyway, so what happened during the 2020 and 2021 years, I was writing the majority of my life with Maverick City adjacent people, such as Nick, and a bunch of friends. In that time, we formed a collective called Family Music. That's when Sons kind of picked up. All of these people we met through a camp that me and Nick were at in March of 2020. So without that camp, without that and that week in Atlanta, I don't know what my life would look like right now. At the beginning of 2022, there had been so much momentum and so much travel for me, moving away from the Detroit area, just going and guest leading places and writing everywhere throughout the country with people, that it was becoming apparent to me that my duties as a do-no-breed goat, she's like a little sister to me. It was becoming apparent to me that my responsibilities as a worship pastor were getting kind of, you know, I wasn't as sold anymore on that being my main thing. Which to me, somebody who really loves the local church and somebody who really loved being a worship pastor, was hurtful almost like internally, because I was like, I don't want that to change. Like, I love being a worship pastor, but the Lord was being really faithful and really good. And he put some people at my home church that I knew could handle it and who were even better at it than I was at, you know, the whole pastoring thing and organizational thing. And so he kind of released me from that at the beginning of 2020. And I spent the rest of the year kind of transitioning in a new team into the role that I was in, and then me transitioning out and moving down to Atlanta, where I live now in a new house just outside the Atlanta metro area, kind of in between, if you're in Georgia or know Georgia, I'm in between Athens, Georgia and Atlanta, in the little middle of nowhere zone, in the little town called Monroe, which is where I'm at today, in my home office. And I'm getting married in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I know, it's insane. My fiance lives in Athens, so that was one of the reasons I came down here to Atlanta, but also because I was flying down to Atlanta like 2-3 times a month anyway for work. So that's what my life has been in a very brief nutshell.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because I observed you. Of course, we were riding just a boatload in that season,
yeah,
especially right after the camp. And everything sort of shut down and everyone's on Zoom all the time. And Steve and I, gosh, we probably wrote 2-3 times a month. So much. Mm-hmm. Wrote a bunch of tunes. But I observed you, a few things happened that I wanted to highlight. One is when you say I was traveling for work, you were going, particularly in this Mav City kind of circle that we first met in, you were starting to do a lot of things with Mav City mostly as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Only as a writer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Which I even remember was a real frustration for you. As someone who's an incredible vocalist and worship leader, you were kind of like, I want to sing and I want to lead. But I'm constantly being with Mav, I'm being pulled into these rites, and which obviously has changed, and we'll get there. But you, at some point though, you signed a pub deal. Is that right? With Mav City Travel.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That was the start of really feeling like, man, I think they need to change. Like, as far as where I was living, what I was doing. That was May of 2021, late May, early June of 2021. So my first option is coming up here in this year. So that was after, and that was something that was crazy, man. I feel like there was like 3 or 4 people that for whatever reason, they identified as potential staff writers for them. And I happened to be one of them. And I think, honestly, I still to this day, I'm not totally sure what the list of criteria they had going in the back end was for all that stuff. It seemed to me like it was just like whoever was available and said yes to literally everything, which at the time, that was the season I was in. I was like, I'm going to say yes, no matter what the cost is, no matter what I have to do, because I have fallen in love with writing church music. I have fallen in love with Lord, if you're going to give me an opportunity to write worship songs, you're going to give me an opportunity to write with people who are better than me at writing worship songs, I'm going to say yes every time. And I'm going to trust, like, obviously within the responsibility and scope of what I had to do back home. I was taking care of a 50 plus person, you know, volunteer ministry and a small staff and all that stuff. So I had to maintain all those things. But like, within that scope, I was going to say, Lord, like, you put this in me. You basically, like, you got me into this for sure, not of my own volition. So I'm just going to chase it, you know, whatever it is. And so every time they said anything, they were like, can you be in Dallas? I said, yes. Can you be in Charlotte? I said, yes. Can you be in Atlanta 14 times next week? You know, like, yes. Yeah. When they shut everything down and they were like, we're going to bubble up and we're going to do this camp thing for, you know, we're going to get everybody quarantined and we're going to, you know, basically lock you in a Airbnb for a week and write a bunch of songs and record like 100 songs. Do you want to be a part of it? And I said, yes, let's do it. And so it was these constant yeses. And you know, that's not to say, I'll say that, like, I think having a heart, a posture of yes to the Lord is really healthy. And I think it has to be said, and so many people smarter than me have said it, but like having great boundaries over your time and your energy is also incredibly important. And as somebody who probably swung the pendulum too much one direction, I'll be the first to say, you know, you have to be very, very careful about when the Lord is saying, say yes to me. And when you want to say yes to a person just because you want to impress them or gain ground or something like that. And that's never healthy. I've probably humanly benefited from saying yes to people and then paid for it spiritually later. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I have gained favor with man in seasons of my life. And even recently in this own past 3 years where I can look back and say, that was a human decision to say yes to that. And I paid for it spiritually later. You know what I mean? It's like, you feel overworked, you feel overused, you feel underappreciated because you're not actually saying yes to the right things. And that's like, you know, classic burnout, classic whatever. But sometimes really well-intentioned people will reward you for, you know, misintentioned askings. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's so much good stuff in there, Steve, but like, there's a few pieces that you mentioned, because I know some of you guys on this call, and we've talked even like a season of doing a lot more writing and getting you know, rights with certain people. And when do I ask and when do I say yes? And all this stuff. It seems like a part of most people's story is it, like you, Steve, there's a season of yes.
Yep.
Making yourself available and really trying to do all the things as much as you can. And there's a grace on that season too, that God gives you for those yeses, the right ones, as you mentioned. And then also the other part that you said is like, there's also that season ends. It can't be a life. It's not a sustainable life to say yes to everything. So it's constantly just like, figuring out, what does the Lord want me to say yes to? And knowing for a season, it might be, that was when we met in 2020. And yeah. I told the Lord, I remember years before I'd fought being a worship pastor for a long time. And I said, when I finally gave in, I said, Lord, I'll be a worship pastor. I said, anytime you ask me to lead worship anywhere, I'm saying yes.
Yeah.
For a year or two. And then the same thing with songwriting in 2020, when we were writing a lot, it was like, anyone who asks anytime, it doesn't even matter who or what, I'm saying yes. Yeah. I'm not in that season anymore. Right. But I, you know, there is that There's so much good in that. We could dive straight in there.
We could. And I think too, just maybe even just to wrap it up, I think it's really important for new songwriters for the reason of reps, you know, like if you're not familiar and you're just getting like into co-writing or even songwriting again, maybe like for me, like I'd put it down for a while as a worship pastor. I was just writing, you know, gnarly solo stuff. Every once in a while, I was not in the habit of like inviting creativity and inviting inspiration into my life daily, which is what I do now. Just the habit of like, all right, I'm going to write as much as I can, no matter what, I think is a newer or returning writer, that is a good season to be in.
As much as you can. Figure out the times in your schedule when you can say yes. And then just schedule as much stuff in there. There is something to be said for reps and just writing loads of songs. Steve, you and I were just talking about this in Indianapolis. We came and saw you guys, and we were kind of all talking about, we legitimately, there was probably 15 to 20 songs in a period of a year and a half that you and I wrote together with different people.
Easy.
It was a lot. And you and I and Jordan even wrote a lot together. We really legitimately didn't know one of those songs was going to be liked by a whole lot of people more than another one. I felt like they were all pretty good. Who knows? And I think that you don't know. And that's one of the reasons that reps and just like literally showing up, being faithful and trusting God is a pretty big, like, it sounds overly simple, but I think that both of those pieces, both showing up and doing your piece of it and trusting the Lord completely with the fruit of it and what happens with it is I think that goes for all of Christian life, but certainly in songwriting.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
That's so great. Can we fast forward the story or keep walking in the story? So 2021, you and Jordan, do you guys do a live recording somewhere in there? Let's first talk about, you guys were completely independent and just buds and said, hey, we're going to do this live recording of some songs we've written.
Yeah.
Funded, all the stuff.
Yeah, so it was May of 21. We had like a batch of songs. I think it was six or seven songs that we'd written. Only Ever Good being the one that you, me, and Jordan Warren wrote. That was like a last minute addition to the batch that we were like, hey, this is a great song. We want to record it. I think it'd be fun to close the night with it, you know? But yeah, that was a self-funded project in the most grassroots sense you could possibly think of. We sent letters to like friends and family being like, hey, we believe that the Lord is on this. We have been praying for something like this for a really long time. Would you consider contributing money? Like old school, like I'm going on a mission trip in ninth grade and I need some money for food and candy. Kind of like letter, you know what I mean?
You get some like, Sour Patch Kids?
Yeah, like hi, Uncle Joe, I'm going to Texas for a mission trip and I need to buy Sour Patch Kids. Yeah. Would you send me $10? But in this case, it was like, hey, we're considering a record that's going to be upwards of, you know, $10,000 or more, you know, kind of thing. Ended up, and then you rely on like the goodness of friends and the goodness of just like brothers and sisters in Christ who hear about what you're doing and they really want to help. I'm the kind of person that never expects a handout, but the Lord has been forcing things like that on me, even in this season of kind of reliance. And that was sort of the start of that. Like we did it at Jordan's old church in Richmond, and they gave us the space for free. They were basically like, yep, come in and use our main space like on a Friday before a huge Sunday morning. And they're just like, yeah, it's fine. No worries. We had one of our best friends run all the production for us. We had another one of our best friends do all of the back end tracking and mixing for us. All of the guys who played in the band were either like volunteers from the church or buddies that we just knew and were like, hey, come in and do this thing with us. I think at the end of the day, the whole project cost us under $8,500 start to finish. Everything's out. We are done paying for things, which I can tell you, we're doing so many projects after that. That is the cheapest project I've ever done.
It's dirt cheap. Yeah. And that's, you're talking audio, video, the whole night.
Dude, I'm talking everything, everything. Yeah. Like everything's on YouTube. Everything's on DSPs. And you know, your aunt in, you know, Canada can hear it after you dial her on the operator line. You know, that's what I'm talking about. And we were stoked about it. That project, though, as much energy as we put into it, that project feels like it's been buried, but it's okay. That's like what me and Jordan talk about. It's like we put so much energy into that, and that was such like a huge important thing for us that now is just almost an asterisk on the career that we've got. But the asterisk is massive because the asterisk goes, this paved the way for X, Y, and Z. You know, the tribal guys heard Only Ever Good and saw some of the footage from the night. And they were like, we always believe in you guys, but now you kind of put some meat on the bones of what we believed you could do. Why don't we make this thing official? They brought us in on a deal early last year. So a year, I can't remember if it was a year to the day, but it was something weird like that, where last May of 22, we were in Atlanta recording live from 1971 under a tribal label with tribal people, which is, if anybody's here who's probably heard anything from Sons, it's probably what you've heard is the live from 1971 stuff. And it was just like seeing the Lord's faithfulness from, trust me, you know, I know you guys believe in this, but you don't understand how much I believe in you, kind of thing from the Lord. To the point where we were standing there in that studio, Nick, where we were when they were recording Mav Volume 2 and 3, or whatever it was, you know, one of the last albums that looked like that beigey, you know, sepia filtered old Mav videos, like the one where Promises was recorded, where we were in that same room recording our own stuff with the same people that had believed in us from day one, you know, with JJ and Tony, and those are the two guys that run Maverick City and Tribal, and like some of the people that were there at that first camp with us were in the room with us, you know, worshiping with us and encouraging us. And man, I mean, it's just been, with Sons specifically, it's been a wild ride that I never anticipated. And then, I mean, we're looking at a year, almost a year later now, working on our third record with David Leonard, you know, like the goat of what it means to write a great corporate worship song, at least in this era of that, you know.
Not familiar with any of his
I'm gonna see, there's a song called Greater You Lord. Are you familiar with that one?
So you guys did, you it's funny because I'm sure to you it feels really slow in some days, and yet at the same time, it as we're talking through, I was like, oh my gosh, it's kind of actually really fast. I mean, we only met each other not 3 years ago on the dominoes. And all these things have happened, all these dominoes. And what I'm noticing in your story is like, it's saying yes to Jesus when he calls you to something, and saying yes when really all the answers aren't answered, or all the questions aren't answered yet. Right. So you don't know how you're going to pay for this recording, but you felt like God was calling you to do it. So I guess the encouragement to those of us on the call or those listening is like, you probably have your, if you feel a call to do things like this, you probably have your team at your church, whatever like God's given to you. And you guys just continue to say yes. And like, look how the Lord has used it. And then you guys release an album this last fall, some singles, mm-hmm. an album, the 1971 album that you mm-hmm. mentioned. And then you get a call because there's some friends on tour and they wanted you to join them. And I can't imagine, I don't feel like I've heard Jordan's version of this. I don't think I've heard your version of how this all happened, but how crazy it must have felt.
You want the filtered version or the unfiltered version?
I want the PG unfiltered version. That's what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. I was home. I forget what month we left for tour. Might have been October. I think it was October. Maybe November. I think I was home for my mom's birthday in October. And we were celebrating her birthday at the end of October. I get a phone call from Tribal saying, hey, Mav's doing a couple more dates on the Kingdom Tour. And we want you guys to jump in and do three slots with us. Do like a little mini Midwest run, which for me, I was like, heck yeah, those are my old stomping grounds. Let's go. They were like, I was like, when is it? And they're like, it's next week. And I was like, you know, we don't live in the same town, right? Like me and Jordan live on separate sides of the country. Almost. I'm in Atlanta and he's in Denver, Colorado. Secondarily, we don't have a set band. We have no guys that are like, they're like, we know the set list really well. It's all buddies that come in and do studio stuff or like just come in for things, you know? So we're like, all right. And then at first, we were being told like they're like, guys, we love you. We're for you, but the funding isn't there to like get you guys out there. You'll have to figure out how to get to Indianapolis, which was the first stop. And I was like, okay, well, here we go. You know, Lord, is this a yes you want us to make? You know, is this one of those moments where I really want to say yes to this because it feels so cool. It's Kingdom Tour. It's Kirk Franklin. It's Maverick City. It's stadiums or whatever you call them. It's arenas. Like this would be the coolest, most impressive thing I could possibly do for myself. Like I would impress myself if I got to do this. And I was like there. This is a little bit more of the unfiltered version. I was there with my mom standing there and I was talking to the guys from Tribal. And the first thing I said after they said like, when is it? And I was like, it's going to be a week from now. And I was like, I can't do it, man. That's not going to be good for me. You know, that's not going to be good for my health. That's not going to be good for my mind. That's not going to be good for anything. I've got to be at the other hand of it. I was supposed to be leading fam camp that same week, you know, like running the family music massive camp that we do twice a year. And I was like, I don't want to let 30 other of my writers down. I don't want to let 30 of my friends down. I was like, this just doesn't work. I called Jordan. We talked about it. We called them back and to Tribal's credit, when I said that, they're like, no, we get it. That's like good stewardship of your headspace. They were disappointed. But I talked to Jordan. We both mulled it over.
Did you hang up the phone and you said no?
Yep.
Okay. All right. I just want to make that point that you said no to a stadium tour. You said no. All right. Continue. Sorry.
Yeah. I said no because I was... Yeah, I called Jordan and he was a little shocked that I said no. And we talked it over and he's like, well, what if we can do this, this and that? And I was like, if we can do X, Y and Z, which was basically get funding, find a band and get to Indianapolis. We were like, maybe we can give it a shot.
It's like a movie.
I know. we called them back. And they picked up right away and they were like, what can we do to make this happen? And so they worked with us. We found four of the most amazing dudes on the planet to leave their wives, their kids, and their jobs for 7 days and go with us. And just on a hope and a prayer that everything would kind of work out on the back end, that they would work out. Still waiting on some things in that realm, but the tour happened. We got to Indianapolis. It was the biggest event that I've ever been a part of in my life. And I think we had some incredible conversations that week about what it means and what it looks like to be worship leaders in the context of what a lot of people would consider a full-on show. You know, when you, I don't know how many people made it to Kingdom Tour in this group, but if he went, it was one of the best productions I'd ever seen in my life. Like, hands down, Kirk Franklin knows how to put on a show. And the lights were amazing. The sound was impeccable. The choir was ridiculous. And we were this little tiny like band, you know, like 6-piece band that had to open up the show. And even now, still, I still don't love that language around it. It's just the common language of what we do is, you know, you go, hey, have a great show or whatever. I still struggle with that even internally. I just got to get over it. But like what it meant to be like, all right, what are we here to do? We got to set the stage for what Maverick City is doing and what Kirk Franklin's doing. And we had a lot of great conversations about purity of heart, purity of spirit, like purity of intention about like, what are we doing here? Purity of expectation for what we can imagine might happen from something like this. I mean, when you think about a Maverick City Kingdom tour with the caliber of people that you're with and the amount of eyes that are going to be looking at you and seeing you and ears are going to be hearing you, you start to get thoughts in your head of like, oh man, this could be huge. This could be a big break. And like, at the same time, you got to remember, and this might feel like, I don't know, minimizing something massive, but I don't think it is. It's like, you have to maintain the same posture on a stage like that as you would like in a prayer room, or like when you're leading at your home church. And we got to, one of the coolest things from that tour, I think, was being able to do Q&As. Like, they brought us in on some of the Mav Q&A stuff, and people would ask us, what's it like leading in a room that big? And it's like, I think this was sort of the mantra we came up with on tour. It was like, it's just little, it's like you break an 18,000 person room down into groups of 50, and it's like leading on Sunday morning. You know, it's like, if you look at 50 people in this crowd, that's your congregation. If you look at 25 people over here, that's your congregation. Maybe you lead a church that's 200 and you go, all right, these 200 people, that's my congregation for this moment. And how am I going to minister to them? And how am I going to move them to move the heart of God right now? And you kind of have to forget that there's 18,000 people in the room, and you focus on the individuals, because it's not like, and maybe this is heretical, but I don't believe that God sees, I don't know if he sees 18,000 people as a unit when he goes to those things. I still think he's focused on the individual heart. I still believe that he's focused on what's going on between you and him. And there is something beautiful that happens in the collective. I think that's why he talks about it in scripture. But I think as in moments of worship, he is focused on spirit and truth of the individual. And so as a worship leader, I feel like that should also be my heart, is to be less concerned about moving a room and more concerned about moving his heart and helping people figure out how they can like open up and move his heart as well. You know what I'm saying? But it's like incredibly intimidating to look at 18,000 people and say, I have to do that with 18,000 people. And where we got was, you don't have to do that with 18,000 people. You have to do it with 50, you know, you have to do it with this 25. You minister to them for the moment, and then you adjust your ministering, you know. And it's all happening like that. It's all happening in the split matter of the moment. But that's how we kind of ended up doing it. Is like, you're still a pastor, you're still a worship leader, and you still want to like give your freaking best, because this is the biggest opportunity you've gotten to like lead and to worship Jesus and something like that.
The responsibility, I think one of the things that struck me, it was really, really fun. I think Indy was the first show you guys were on, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So my wife and I got to join and go see them lead at the first show. And what struck me was that Jordan and Steve have been saying the yes. They've been leading faithfully in congregations for years and years and years and years. The thing that really moved me that night, still moves me now, is that there's a piece of like a responsibility of Jesus saying, I've seen you be faithful with this. Guys, we talked about this even in the parable of the talents, right? A couple months back in Writing Club. Like, I've seen you be faithful with this. And I was so struck that Jordan and Steve, you would never have known they hadn't played and led worship in a stadium before that night. Mm-hmm. I just thought I knew that, but no one else did. And you wouldn't have known it to watch them. They led faithfully. They led pastorally. It was a very moving worship time. And I thought, man, the Lord has been building you up your whole life to do this and a bunch of other things too, not just this, not that that's the biggest thing, but just that, gosh, how the Lord prepares us and also takes us into the next leg of the journey, which is often scary.
Yeah, dude, thanks. So thank you, man. I mean, I love you, but that's really, really kind of you to say. Thanks for saying that. And I think you're right. It's not the biggest thing he's prepared us for, but it is. I think I'm sure, I forget who said it, might have been John Guerra or Andy Rozier or one of the guys from Harvest back in the day. It's like he is preparing us for the biggest thing we'll ever come into, which is stepping into glory with him. And worship here is preparing for that. So in a sense, it is the biggest thing in terms of preparation of the heart and preparation of the spirit for what we're going to be doing for eternity. But I mean, you're right, dude. I mean, even just earthly, the season that we've all been in the last couple of years, as far as songwriting, I feel like it's prepared us in so many different things that are not about songwriting, like what it means to have community, what it means to have a true friend, what it means to be humble. If you talk about virtual songwriting, I know I'm taking a huge left turn right now, but like, if you talk about virtual songwriting as a lesson in what it means to be an incredible listener and like an active listener in communication skills, you cannot be a good virtual songwriter without shutting the heck up, you know, and listening to somebody's ideas. You cannot be a good virtual songwriter unless you are actively engaging and trying to add in your own mind to what somebody else is doing far away from you and on a delay. You know what I mean? Like, you can't jump over and talk over somebody. You can't sing on top of somebody and be like, oh, wait, what about that thing? It's like, I'm going to let you get your thought out. And more than just let you, I'm going to try to encourage the best idea out of you until you are satisfied with the thought that you had, you know? I don't know. I'm feeling like, even in that, it's like, it's helped me with my relationships in my life. It's helped me with my relationship with my fiance, like all sorts of things like that, man.
That's so good, man. And I wonder if we can wrap with this. So you took it to there, and I wanted to ask about this because, guys, legitimately, I'm telling you, I'm not just saying this. Steve is one of the best songwriters I've ever met in my entire life. And now I get to write, even just this morning, I get to write in Nashville all the time with folks who are in publishing deals and artists and record deals and all this stuff. I still to this day, Steve is an incredible, incredible writer that I think I've probably learned more, as much or more from Steve than anyone in my life about writing, in particular about co-writing, and, you know, bouncing things off of each other about worship writing a lot. Steve, I wonder if we do 5 minutes of lightning round, co-writing best practices. What have you learned that in co-writing works really well? What doesn't work really well? What things in the past few years have you picked up that are like, this is what I hold on to as my tools?
Co-writing best practices. I think the number one thing you can be in a good co-write is like an incredible hang. That is first and foremost the best thing that, I've found in a co-write is like, just as much as you can, just be the person that's going to go into the right and try to bring life and light to that room. That's first. Second, I would say you have to be open-handed with every idea. And I mean that in the utmost sense. I don't mean that in the half-hearted, like, you know, just be, you know, be flexible. No, I mean, literally, if you bring an idea, which you need to, that's part number three. But even before you bring an idea, you have to be prepared to give up an idea. And so before you bring an idea, you have to be in this posture of, no matter what I say, I believe that somebody else has the next part of it. Like, the every idea I bring can be better, and it might not get better. And that's also okay. You know, like, that's good. If it doesn't get better, that means I brought a pretty great idea. But going in with the posture of, every idea can be better, and I'm bringing, I want to do a co-write today because I believe that I don't have all the pieces. I believe that I don't have all the perspective. I believe that the two or three or four, depending on who you are, other writers have the pieces that are missing. And I believe, especially in a spiritual setting, in a worship setting, that we are under the authority of the Holy Spirit, who is going to join all of us together with the right mind, which is something that is so incredibly unique to worship writing that country writers don't get. Maybe, you know, I would say country writers, pop writers, you know, R&B writers, you know, whatever kind of co-writing room you're in, if you've invited the Holy Spirit into it, yes, I think he does the same thing. But I think there's a special part of him that he reserves for those that are writing for the church, and he outpours even more greatly into unity in those moments. So we believe all that to say, I'm going to bring an idea and I'm going to be okay with changing it. Third is, don't come to a co-write unless you are an absolute pro and your MO is like, my best work comes when I adjust other people's songs. You can kind of come in with the idea of like, I'm going to wait and listen and see. But even in that sense, I would say it's always best practice to come in with at least a hook, at least the idea of a chorus, at least some kind of concept that you really want to unpack with somebody. That's what I would say. That's my lightning round.
The worst thing that could happen is when you get into a co-writing room, and I think this goes whether you're like writing with fellow worship leaders like we do like here, or even if you're writing for another artist, always trying to have 3, 4, maybe even 5 ideas in your back pocket, or, you know, on your phone, as it were, that way that you're never caught empty handed, because they might be like, I don't know, what ideas do you have? What ideas did you bring? And that definitely happens sometimes. And being able to say, yeah, here's one, or here's another, or here's another. Do any of these strike anything for you? And I found that when people show up prepared and prayerful, it's just like a worship set. If you prepare well and you pray well, then like the Lord shows up in amazing ways. It's like, oh, I was just reading that passage the other day. Let's write that. And then this amazing song is birthed. And
dude, absolutely. Absolutely. I can't tell you how many times prepare well and pray well is really great. I can't tell you how many times I have felt like I got caught with my pants down because I've been doing so many co-writes. And this goes back to what we said earlier. I've been doing so many co-writes, I haven't had a chance to recharge or reload. And I'm not the kind of person that, you got to know yourself as a writer. And I am not the kind of person that's going to go from a co-write and be inspired to go back home and like continue to write on my own that day. There are people out there, actually, Sam McCabe, the guy who you were going to get to hear today, who is 10 times more cool than I am as far as most things. He's a foodie. He's a better songwriter. He's pretty. He's the kind of guy that leaves a co-write and he's like, I had like 15 thoughts in that co-write and I'm going to go home and I'm going to write all these thoughts down. I am the kind of guy who is a co-write and I go, I need to go get a beer and go to sleep, you know, because I'm like, that was a lot of social work. That was a lot of creative work. I love both of those things, but I need some alone time and I need some decompressed time. And I go from co-write to co-write to co-write. If I do that too often, I'm going to get into a co-write where I don't have anything left. And I know in those moments, I'm relying on the Holy Spirit that I've done good work throughout the week. But, there are times when I've been caught with my pants down and I'm like, I have nothing, you have nothing, and this co-write is not going to happen. You know, it's like, it's not going to be a great write. And it turns out that way. So to your point, man, it's like, come with something. And if you don't have anything, just take a break from co-writing, take a break from the grind of it and spend some time, you and the Lord, take a couple of days and just be like, no, I'm going to clear my co-writing schedule for 2-3 days. I'm going to spend some time in some prayer and some worship solo. I'm going to spend some time talking with friends that are not going to ask me to write. And I'm going to get some ideas back. I'm going to get some more oil in the machine. You know what I'm saying?
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Well, Steve, our time's wrapping here, but one thing I always ask is, would you pray over us, this community of worship songwriters, both folks on the call today and just people listening back? Would you pray over us?
Yeah, I would love to. Oh, Jesus. Man, how do you pray over a room of creatives, Lord, in a way that moves moves them to action, Father? I don't know, Father. I don't know how to pray over a room of creatives that well. I've always struggled with that. But Jesus, right now I just ask that this room is gathered in a lot of different spaces for a purpose that I find so, so compelling and I know moves your heart, Jesus, which is to write songs that move your people closer to you and into spaces that open them up to receive more of you. And so I pray that that happens. I pray that you allow those moments to happen. I pray that the songs that come out of this group, the stuff that you learn here, that we've learned here, Father, it moves into a place in our hearts, into our minds, and then into our hands and into our mouths, that moves the hearts of people to move you. Because if we're not doing that, Lord, if we're not bringing you glory, and if we're not submitted to your rule and your reign and your idea of what this whole thing is, then we're just doing it wrong. And Father, I just pray that you'd reveal that more and more to us each day. Like, I don't have the answers 100% to what your full mission for the church is, Lord, but I am willing to learn and I'm willing to be taught. And I pray that over this room too, Lord, that we would just be willing to learn from you and be willing to be taught by you and be willing to be moved in directions that maybe are uncomfortable or they grind against the things that we feel like are pillars of what we thought you wanted to do, Lord. But would you break down the things in us that we feel like might have been you and replace them with things that we know are you, Father? Replace them with songs that we know are from you. Replace like words and melodies and even the practical things of songwriting, Lord. Just give us the things that come from you to move your church forward, to bring light to dark places, to soften hearts where they need to be, Lord, in a way that only music can do. Father, and that along the process, we wouldn't lose ourselves along the way, Lord, that we wouldn't just say yes to people, but we would say yes to you. And Holy Spirit, I just pray for a fresh movement, a fresh falling on each person here, that they would just be filled in a new way. Even the Holy Spirit, I just pray that you'd fill these virtual spaces that we're in, that you are beyond time and space. So Zoom is nothing for you. That you would fill this room right now with a sense of encouragement and an awe and wonder for what we get to do. And just, Lord, that you keep us humble and focused on your kingdom. And you keep us always looking at your face and loving each other. In Jesus' name, amen.
I hope that was as meaningful for you as it was for us. If you're a songwriter and you're resonating with any of what you heard today, we'd love to get to know you more and introduce you to some folks in our community. All of our podcast interviews and guest lectures come from either our Writing Club monthly breakouts or our annual Writing Worship Conference. Check out the show notes to learn how to get more involved with Writing Club, our mentorship taught by our founder, Chrissy Nordoff, or stuff we talked about in today's episode. Find us on Facebook at the Writing Worship Community, on Instagram at writingworship.co, and our website, writingworship.co. We love meeting new folks and supporting songwriters, so be sure to stop in, say hello, and get to know us a little bit. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
The times I've grown most as a songwriter are the times I've had mentors showing me the way. If you're looking to grow as a songwriter, we're now accepting applications for our Worship Songwriter Mentorship. Now, it's available only a few times each year. The Worship Songwriter Mentorship is a songwriting intensive that will help you craft impactful worship songs. It's a course created by Dove Award-winning and Grammy-nominated drumroll here, please, our founder, pro songwriter Chrissy Nordhoff. It's a small group community, and it's led by other songwriters over the course of 9 weeks. It's an intensive course and a small group co-writing environment, and that means you'll be added to a special group of about 12 writers, give or take. Each group is led by experienced songwriters, some of them my dear, dear friends, and I've even gotten to lead a group or two. Rachel here, by the way. We love the church, and we love to champion fellow worship songwriters just like yourself. In this mentorship, you'll learn how to write songs for you and your congregation. You'll go deeper in your intimacy with Jesus. You'll get the tools needed to help craft songs more easily and never run out of creative ideas. Okay, I know it sounds too good to be true, but trust me, this course is a game changer. You'll learn how to leverage your unique songwriting personality and connect with other like-minded writers in a meaningful way. Truly, I can't think of another course, group of people, community that has impacted my songwriting the way that this mentorship has. If you're wanting to take the next steps in your songwriting journey, then apply now at the link in our show notes. We hope to see you there.